Welcome back to Is It Horror? This is Season 2, Episode 12, The Silence of the Lambs.
I'm Joe.
I'm Matt.
I'm Mitz.
And I am Steve. If you haven't joined us before, each episode we analyze a piece of media, usually a movie, whose horror status is debatable, and we look at the creator's intent, audience reception, and the content of the media, all in an effort to better define the horror genre. If you agree with our take, awesome, and if you don't, that's awesome too. Horror is a diverse genre, and all are welcome. And before we get into the film, we will go to Joe's Get to Know You Corner. Joe?
All right. So Silence of the Lambs. I guess some of my thought process was kind of thinking about like real life serial killers. And the question is there a serial killer or true crime that you find interesting or follow or any of that type of thing? I guess for me, it's not a thing that I've really gotten into, like any of the true crime podcasts or any of that type of thing. And I don't know. I haven't followed a lot. Like my mind always goes to like the Zodiac killers. The first thing that comes to my mind about that type, about serial killers. But I really honestly don't know a lot about that. But I do find it interesting. So I don't have a great answer to the question, but yeah. So that's me, I guess.
I don't necessarily. So yeah, I guess I'll just say, whenever I watched the show Mindhunters that was on Netflix, which was about, I forget what the guy's real name is, but it was about one of the FBI unit that kind of pioneered the idea of profiling serial killers and came up with the term serial killer. So there's the TV show Mindhunters, and then that is based on an actual guy, and he wrote a book about his work that he did, and the book kind of focuses on some famous serial killers, but like one of them in particular that they talked about was like BTK and some other killers like that. But anyhow, more than like serial killers themselves, I find the idea of like the FBI and profiling serial killers to be more of the interesting subject. So I've watched a lot and read a few things about that. So this movie was kind of right up my alley. It's very interesting to watch.
I went through like a pretty heavy true crime phase, my mid-20s, I would say. I'm getting over that a little bit, but there's, you know, I still watch documentary here and there. I don't find serial killers particularly interesting, though. I am more interested in, like, the one-time crimes, especially when it's, like, someone killing someone in their family. So, like, your Chris Watts case, Brian Landry, Scott Peterson, those are all, like, really interesting cases to me. Just how someone who claimed to love you and all this stuff could turn on you. I find those interesting.
I think that true crime is not really a genre that I've ever been super interested in. It's funny because being a horror fan like I am, you would think that that would be, I don't know, I guess for all of us, you know, it seems like that would be a thing that would be a bigger topic of interest. But I guess I've never really spent a lot of time, want to spend a lot of time following on that. I think it's interesting what makes some of these people tick. But I think the one that comes to most to mind that I've spent the most time, I guess, reading up on, just because it sort of happened while I was growing up, is the whole Jeffrey Dahmer case. That being said, I haven't seen the miniseries, and I can understand the families of the victims feeling it's a little bit weird watching Evan Peters get an award for playing their killer so well. So I guess that's part of the thing I always find a little bit kind of strange on it. So it's kind of nice when these sort of movies, they can delve into those topics without necessarily being based on specific actual people, so that you don't have to feel sort of, I don't know,
icky.
Yeah, I guess I was going to say complicit somehow in it, but complicit's maybe not the word I want to look for. But, like, I don't know, because, you know, sometimes, like, you see people that are really interested in serial killers, and it's almost like they're reveling in it, like it's like a trading card to collect or something. And I guess it's a fascination I can somewhat understand in terms of wanting to stay safe, but then every now and again, you see some people that seem like normal people that tend to idolize some of these people almost the way that they talk about them. And that always feels strange to me, I guess. So I don't know. I guess that's a really, really roundabout answer on that. But there's my rambling answer.
Now that kind of leads me into a follow-up question that I've kind of wondered about this type of thing. Like, do you guys think, I guess I always wonder about some of this stuff, like when like serial killers get kind of so highly publicized and like sensationalized, almost like it feels like it's feeding into the problem almost a little bit for like general populace to kind of get so into it. And it's almost giving them what they want is the like attention and the, you know, whatever. Like, I guess, do you guys feel like that's a big thing, or it doesn't really matter, they're going to do their thing anyways, or does it breed new serial killers or anything like that?
I mean, I do think it's kind of weird, like Steve was saying, that I don't know how you properly cover something like that in the news while paying respect and then also not, like, sort of, like, I don't know. There definitely are people who, like, idolize serial killers, or, like, people who fangirl over specific serial killers. So I don't know how you do that. But I do kind of think that it's, like, it almost would be better, I think, in those cases if that person's face and name never, like, hit the news or hit newspapers. I don't know. I don't know, like, what the best way to do it, but it does feel odd that that happens.
I think I feel particularly ick about movies that are, like, dramatized movies rather than documentaries. Like, you know, the Jeffrey Dahmer series that just came out. Like, why do we need to make films, artistic films, about real horrible things that are murder? Like, I understand making films about historical events that were also tragic, but this is too personal for that, I think. I think that needs to be kept to, like, a documentary format.
Yeah.
If anything.
I think I agree with you on that. Or, like, somebody, or, like, Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy. It just feels, like, so weird. Like, okay, you're going to have, like, this hot kind of heartthrob guy playing Ted Bundy. It just feels so weird and disrespectful to the victims in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I go on it, too. I agree. I think, I can't remember which of you had said it, but just the idea of, it feels like we ought to be able to forget about who the serial killer is in a way. Like, we should definitely, the people who are looking for these types of people should definitely study those cases and learn from those cases and understand them. And I have definitely heard of situations where people that have listened to true crime podcasts have taken some of the lessons they've learned from what had happened to various victims in order to save their life. Like, I know one tip that I'd heard, I think I want to say it was from My Favorite Murder, talked about the idea of just screaming doesn't necessarily get people's attention, but screaming specific things like, I don't know this person, or they're trying to kill me, like something that's informational as opposed to just screaming is better. So I guess in those ways, sometimes that can be helpful. But yeah, when you're getting into making a movie or a TV show about those sort of people, it does feel a little bit unintentionally like you are glorifying them a little bit. And really, I don't know if there's anyone out there who's on the bubble that's saying to themselves, oh, I have these urges, but you know what? I just saw that Ted Bundy movie and with Zac Efron, and I thought, man, someone cool is going to play me, so now I am going to go on this killing spree. Like, I don't know if it tips anyone over the edge, But just that some of these people do get remembered and talked about, maybe there is some, that idea of glory and fame, maybe it does intrigue or entice some of these people out there that might otherwise have not quite gotten tipped over the edge. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, it's definitely one of those gray areas that, as we've already said like three times now, and or I'm adding the third time, is there's just a weird ickiness factor where I don't feel exactly good about it, but I don't know what to do about it either.
I think the people who get tipped over the edge by other crimes, like being inspired by other crimes, I think those people are probably few and far between. But for me, it's more of just the respect to the family and the victims. Like, why, if you lost a family member, a child, to a murderer, and that later they're making movies about this guy's life, what, you know, what the hell? Why aren't you making a movie about my kid's life who got killed? You know what I mean? It's just, I don't like it.
Yeah, the simple fact that all of us know the name Ted Bundy and the name Jeffrey Dahmer, and probably none of us could say offhand the names of any of their victims, I think kind of speaks volumes about how we treat serial killers as a society.
It's true. I definitely couldn't name any of their victims. The other thing this made me think of, too, is the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that Quentin Tarantino made. And I think that that one was kind of interesting because he could have focused on Manson and the Manson killings and the death of Catherine Tate. I'm really worried I got that name wrong now that we're getting this. It's Catherine Tate, right?
I think so.
Sounds familiar.
So instead of focusing on her killing, like, he just rewrote this, you know, changed the script, did his sort of revisionist history thing and made the movie more, when she was in it, was about her, about what her life was like, about who she was and getting a feel for her as a character, and then changing the ending so that in his version of it, it doesn't actually happen. And I think there was just something kind of, I know it's in his Tarantino way, sort of beautiful about that, of reclaiming a legacy for someone that so many people just think of as a victim of Manson, and instead showing them as a person and focusing on that and then not involving the killing at all. So I don't know. It seems like, in a way, I guess almost that he's kind of getting at the same idea that we were getting at and wanted to put that into a film in a way.
Just to fact check, it's Sharon Tate. I double checked. It's Sharon Tate.
Thank you for checking that. I feel so bad that I got the name wrong in making that point.
Catherine Tate is also an actress, though.
Well, there you go.
Good discussion.
Yeah. And I don't know. I didn't end up chiming in very much, but it's because you guys hit all the points that I was going to make. I think, Matt, you'd said, like, I wish as a society we could just, like, when horrible crimes like that happen, we could just strike their names from the, you know, humanity's record and move on and focus on the victims. But yeah, anyways, thanks for a good in the corner.
Yay. All right, well then we'll head on to talk about our movie. And I'm actually going to turn the time back over to Joe again, because he's going to introduce our film for us.
Hooray. Okay, so Silence of the Lambs, based on the novel by Thomas Harris. A little bit of trivia for you Dark Tower fans. The audiobook is read by Frank Mueller, who also read the first four Tower books, including the original version of The Gunslinger. And he's just great. I really love... I haven't listened to a lot of the stuff that he's narrated, but I really like his... how he did the Dark Tower books, and it was really sad when he couldn't finish the rest of them, because I think it was a motorcycle accident. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, he's just great. So The Silence of the Lambs, director Jonathan Demme. He is credited with directing Philadelphia in 1993. The Manchurian Candidate in 2004, Rachel Getting Married in 2008. She didn't get married in 2008. That's just the name of the movie.
And he did direct a bunch of other stuff, but I just I didn't write it all down. There was plenty of things.
Yeah, yeah. Writer was Ted Talley. Movies that he's been a writer on are White Palace in 1990 and All the Pretty Horses in 2000 and Red Dragon in 2002. Back of the box description for the movie. A psychopath nicknamed Buffalo Bill is murdering young women across the Midwest. Believing it takes one to know one, the FBI sends Agent Clarice Starling to interview a demented prisoner who may provide clues to the killer's actions. That prisoner is psychiatrist Dr. Hannibal Lecter, a brilliant, diabolical cannibal who agrees to help Starling only if she'll feed his morbid curiosity with details about her own complicated life. As their relationship develops, Starling is forced to confront not only her hidden demons, but also an evil so powerful that she may not have the courage or the strength to stop.
All right, so big spoiler warning heading into this. Of course, we're going to be spoilers for Silence of the Lambs, maybe mild spoilers for some of the adjacent films in the Hannibal Lecter series. But we've got a few different quotes from people involved with the production, and I thought it was kind of interesting because they kind of go back and forth over the idea of wanting the film to be scary, but then also not feeling as horror. And we've talked at length about the idea that scary doesn't necessarily mean that something is horror, and it's maybe one of the least important factors for qualifying as something's horror. But I do think it's interesting to see that dichotomy exist within some of these quotes. So anyway, without further ado, we'll get into those various quotes.
So Jim Ferguson, in an interview with Anthony Hopkins, first discussed, is the film scary? Talking about Clarice meeting, or is it scary, the meeting between Clarice and Hannibal for the first time? Ferguson says, the audience has no idea what they're going to see either. Hopkins, is it scary? Ferguson, it's scary. Hopkins says, good, I wanted to be scary. Then, when asked, is it a horror film? Ferguson says, some people have said, I've been reading, this is a horror movie. I don't think so. How would you describe it? Hopkins replies, psychological thriller, psychological terror story, the most frightening movie I've seen since Psycho.
Jim Ferguson also interviewed Jodie Foster and asked her the same question, is it a horror film? Ferguson says, I read a little clip about Silence of the Lambs that it was a horror film, and that's what I expected last night when I went in, that it bordered on being a horror film. I disagree with that. Foster says, I disagree intensely. Ferguson says, how would you describe this film? And Jodie Foster says, well, I think it's a thriller with a psychological drama as its line through, and it is specifically the psychological drama and the tension of that, the interviews between Dr. Hannibal Lecter and Clarice Starling. There's long, subtextual, and very intense probing conversations that they have that are the fuel and the tension for the rest of the piece and the rest of the plot. It's a very deep film and very moving.
And then also able to find another quote from one of the production designers on the film, Christy Z, and it was from a Vanity Fair interview when she was talking about, in retrospect, the film having won an Oscar for Best Picture. And so in talking about that Oscar, when she had said, horror films don't get to become Best Picture. So kind of just her saying, her surprise that it was able to win, but describing it in that as a horror film.
So in a Deadline interview, this was a realization after the finishing the first table read of the film. Jonathan Demme says, I realized the actual bottom line truth of doing Silence of the Lambs, something I felt when I read the book. I thought, this could be the scariest movie ever, and I want to make that movie. I want to make a Psycho caliber fucking terrifying movie. And then he also said, one was a lesson Jody taught me in the first of the three times we met to talk about the possibility of her playing Clarice. Jody taught me that this is a story of a young woman trying to save the life of another young woman. Maybe it's a thriller, maybe it's a horror movie, but you have to honor the core story. And then he also says, the The awards were shocking. We knew how great Tony and Jody and everybody was, but you just don't think in those terms because at the end of the day, it's a thriller. It has this young woman trying to save another young woman, but it's a thriller. It doesn't seem like an Oscar movie. The nomination took everybody by great surprise.
So again, I think it's just kind of interesting to see both Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster pretty adamant that this wasn't a horror movie. But at the same time, Hopkins, like I said, indicating that he was trying to make his scenes scary. And then also seeing Jonathan Demme kind of seeming to go a little bit back and forth on it, kind of saying like he wasn't really sure if it was a horror movie or if it wasn't a horror movie, but definitely that he was trying to make something that was scary and then at least describing it as a thriller. So it's sort of interesting to see all of their assessments of the film. Looking at the meta tags for it, and I also ended up looking at all of this data that I'm about to share. I looked at all of the films for The Silence of the Lambs. So for those that don't know, the writer Thomas Harris that wrote Silence of the Lambs wrote four books that featured Hannibal Lecter as a character, sometimes the main character, sometimes not. And the order of those goes Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, and then finally he did a prequel book called Hannibal Rising. Now, in terms of films go, the first film made of any of his books was a film called Manhunter that was based on Red Dragon that came out a few years previous to Silence of the Lambs. So then Silence of the Lambs is released. A few years after that, you get Hannibal, and then you get another take on Red Dragon, where they actually called the movie Red Dragon and had Anthony Hopkins come back to reprise his role. So Anthony Hopkins plays this character in both Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, and Hannibal. And then eventually you have a Hannibal Rising film, which shows Hannibal as a child and as, you know, a young man, and Anthony Hopkins didn't return for that. And then Manhunter being the first film to feature Hannibal Lecter, it actually didn't have Anthony Hopkins playing the character. So despite Silence of the Lambs being the one that made the character famous and Anthony Hopkins playing the role, he was not actually the first person to play that character. So the first actor to actually play Hannibal Lecter was Brian Cox. So I wanted to kind of look at the meta tags for all of those films. So what you end up with is that for Silence of the Lambs specifically, 8 streaming services called it thriller, 7 called it drama, 6 called it crime, 4 called it suspense, 2 called it mystery, and 1 labeled it as psychological horror, 1 labeled as horror, as far as I could find. So basically 6% of the labels for this film involve horror for it. So mostly it's labeled as thriller, drama, crime at most places. And then in terms of Google and Wikipedia search trends, there isn't really any spike on Google searches around October, which again doesn't necessarily mean it's a horror movie, but at least people are thinking about it around October, which sometimes can put in that category. There is a little bit of a spike in October in Wikipedia searches, so there's that side of it. And then looking at the book itself and how that is regarded, I went to the website Goodreads, which it's a book review site that allows users to specify whatever genre they want for a book. So it's a pretty good crowdsourcing way to see how readers are regarding the genre of a book. So while the percentage of people tagging the movie as horror within various streaming services is fairly low, readers classified the book, Silence of the Lambs, as most often as horror. That was cited about 33.7% of the time. The next would be thriller at 28.1%, and then you go to mystery at 15%, crime at 13%, and then after that, it really, you know, it's suspense at like less than 5%, psychological thriller less than 3%, and then detective, serial killer, and drama all roughly 1%. And then I wanted to also take a look at all of those same factors for the other movies slash books. And so with Manhunter, about 10% of streaming services called that horror. Red Dragon, 11% called that horror. Nobody was calling Hannibal horror, which is funny to me because I think it's probably one of the more clearly horror. And then Hannibal Rising, about 12% called that horror. And then looking again at the book side of thing, you get the exact same kind of situation as you do with the relationship from Silence of the Lambs to both the book and the movie, where it's a low percentage of people calling it horror. The books, it's a high percentage. So again, you get with Silence of the Lambs, the highest listing as far as the genre classification is horror with, again, 32.9%. And then thriller is the next section there. I won't go into all the statistics on that, but again, just the highest is horror. Same with when you go to Hannibal, 35.6% called it horror, and that's the most picked genre, thriller being the next. And then lastly, Hannibal Rising as 36.8% considering it horror, and then the next genre down being thriller at 29.3%. So I know that's a lot of data, but just the thing ultimately to pare it all down, quantify it, it's interesting that most meta tags for the films don't involve horror, but that as far as the book is concerned, most people consider all of these Hannibal books to be horror. All right, so how does everybody feel about Silence of the Lambs? Is it a horror movie or not?
So for me, I guess my opinion on it, it kind of mirrors some of that data. It really skates the line for me. I had a really hard time coming up with an answer for this, and it might be changed over the course of this recording. Right now, I'm saying it's not horror.
I'm also saying it's not horror, but I am a little bit on the fence because I think we've talked a few times about how like a serial killer that's fictional is basically like Michael Myers or somebody like that. So it's kind of questioning whether Michael Myers is actually what's the word I'm looking for? Actually some sort of like supernatural power. So yeah, I'm a little bit on the fence because it's fictional, but I'm going to say not horror right now.
Yeah, this one's hard. This one's hard, but I'm going to say not horror.
That's interesting. I was really on the fence about this one as well. It's definitely one that's a little harder to quantify. And I don't know if part of me is just feeling a little defiant about it. And so I was willing to say that, yes, it is horror, but I am probably just as much in the middle of the road on the fence as the rest of you. Okay, so the first thing that I kind of wanted to cover in terms of this is some trivia about this. There are only, this is really debatable, mind you, but there are at least six movies that people like to cite that often are considered horror that have ever been nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture. Now, again, that number is subjective. You might be thinking of another film that's not on this short list that you think is horror that has been nominated, or maybe even won. But at least these were the ones that I could find the general consensus online as here are some horror movies that were nominated. And those pictures are The Exorcist, Jaws, The Sixth Sense, Black Swan, Get Out, and then finally Silence of the Lambs, which is the only one that has actually won. And the thing I find interesting about that list is that their horror status, I think, is all very debatable. Clearly we think so, because we already covered Black Swan just two episodes ago, and we're going to be covering Jaws later this season. So these movies that were all up for Best Picture were kind of all on the bubble. And the thing that also makes Silence of the Lambs interesting in terms of Oscar wins is it is one of only three films to ever get what is known in Oscars as the Big Five Academy Awards, which is the Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Screenplay. The other two being It Happened One Night from 1934 and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 1975. With all of that in mind, I think that there's this concept that exists, at least in some people's mind, that horror can't be deep or substantive. So if a movie does feel complex in those ways, people stop considering them to be horror. Do you think that there's anything to that concept?
Well, I think that you're right that people will tend to not consider horror as being something that is that can be like a good movie. Are you asking whether I believe in that concept or whether I agree with it, I guess?
Both.
So I don't agree with it because I do think that horror can tell just as compelling a story and as, you know, anything else. But I do think that there have been times where horror is more just kind of like treated as a spectacle, as like a we're gonna go out on a Friday and have some popcorn and get scared type of a thing. And while I think there's definitely like still cinematic value to movies like that, I think a lot of the most famous horror maybe falls into that like popcorn movie kind of a thing. So maybe that's why it has kind of gotten that stigma. But this movie and some of the other ones we talked about definitely prove to me that you can have substance to a horror film. I've seen it many, many times.
I think a horror movie can have substance. I think that the reason that a lot of the times people won't categorize like deeper movies as horrors because whenever you have a borderline horror movie that's getting into, quote, deep territory, it's usually because I feel like a character is experiencing some kind of psychological change or they're being challenged psychologically. And that's when you get into, like, psychological thriller territory. So it becomes less about the outside horror and more about whatever's going on in the character's mind. So maybe it just becomes harder to classify it as horror in that case, I guess.
One thing I would think about, and it's kind of back to what you, well, Steve, you saying that like this is horror, and like your comment about like the like little bit of defiance you felt about like I'm calling this horror, because I'm right on that fence too, and I totally get that like compulsion. And it's been interesting doing this podcast because I've kind of on some things I've adopted almost the opposite attitude on occasion, where I will do an episode on a movie that like I didn't like, and then I find myself having to like I find myself being like, oh, it's not horror because it was stupid. And like the one that comes to mind is the deer one.
The killing of the sacred deer.
Yes, thank you. The killing of a sacred deer. Yeah. And I just when we watched that originally, I originally classified it as not horror, but I think just because I was like, this is stupid, I don't like this, so I can't call it horror. But it was like I wasn't being rational about that. But anyways, yeah. That was my thought about this subject, I guess.
The thing that comes to mind with this, too, is the idea of just defining something that you're not that familiar with. So I'll share a quick anecdote. Once upon a time, Joe and I worked at a wood shop together. Well, I no longer work there. Joe still does. But in any case, we used to work there together, and there was this relative of the guy who owned the place. He was coming and he was helping out for a day, and so there was some country music playing, and so my favorite music genre growing up was always punk music, and I still have a soft place in my heart for punk music to this day. And so he was talking about how country music was better than punk music. That's where he weighed in on it. And then I, at one point, or I don't remember exactly how it got on the subject, but the point came to him having to define what punk music was. And when he started defining it, what he described was, at least to my understanding, he was describing really like sort of the pop music that you get from Disney stars who are fresh off of being Disney stars but haven't gotten edgy yet. So it was like, he was describing the music from like High School Musical and thinking that that was punk music. So I can't help but wonder if something similar to that is kind of what happens for some of these people that are adamant that if you have a movie that is of higher quality, that has more depth of characters, that has something to say more about the human condition, that you have people that are watching something like that and they're saying it can't be horror because the thing they're comparing it to is basically the cheapest slasher film that they've ever seen that was just about having some boobs and having some people get cut up and saying, well, that's a terrible movie. This can't possibly be in the same genre. And it's just feels to me like a very uninformed impulse, because as we say at the beginning of every one of these episodes, horror is a diverse genre. There's a lot out there. There's a lot of different types of horror films, a lot of different topics covered, some that are just the fun popcorn flick that aren't looking to be too substantive, and some that really make you think about your existence and life and the human condition. And so I think that maybe that's a lot of where that impulse comes from, is people that don't like horror that are comparing this to the single horror film that they've seen that they didn't like and saying that they are not the same.
Yeah, I think it probably is somewhat like that. It's sort of similar to something like comic books, where people hear comic books and they think, oh, you're reading Archie comics, or you're reading like Spider-Man swinging through New York and being your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and Stan Lee's narrating, but they don't think about comics as a genre that's telling like real human stories, like something like The Walking Dead, how The Walking Dead is based on a comic and just became kind of this worldwide phenomenon for many years, where it was telling a story about people and won all kinds of awards doing that, you know? So, yeah, I think it is kind of that stereotype where, you know, they just know what they have an idea, and that's all they can see when they hear horror or they hear comic books or they hear whatever genre it is.
And then getting into this film, what do you think were the most horror-feeling aspects and moments of Silence of the Lambs?
Some of the like really like horror things that I guess popped to my mind, or the things that are like that push it that way for me. One is like the scene when she's in the basement and the lights go out and he's watching her through the night vision goggles and like almost touching her face and doing these super creepy things. That one, and maybe the other one that comes to mind directly is like when Hannibal kind of gets free and he kills the two cops, but just kind of watching his reaction and just kind of how like totally unempathetic and just kind of dead in the eyes he is as he's doing it. I guess those are the two first things that come to my mind.
Yeah, I think what separates a horror movie from a police procedural movie or a murder mystery movie, I guess, something like that, would be in a horror movie, I feel like the main character is being pursued by the killer, and then in a police procedural, it's obviously the other way around. So the most horror moments for me were like when I felt that Clarice was in danger, like actual danger, and she was being pursued. So that was like two specific moments were, of course, at the end in the basement where she's running around not knowing where he is, and then suddenly the lights go off, like Joe said, and he's pursuing her, then going to kill her. And then the other moment I felt that she was in danger, it's kind of an odd one because she's definitely not, it's the very first moment where she meets Hannibal Lecter in the basement. Is that what you said, Joe?
No, I did the basement one with like the night vision goggles, but not the one where she meets Hannibal.
Okay. The other moment I felt that she was in danger was where she first met Hannibal Lecter. And I don't know why, because obviously there's that wall that separates them and they're being surveilled. And so she's definitely not in any physical danger of him. But he's so threatening in that scene that it feels horror, like feels like horror. His demeanor, the way he's just standing there waiting for her, the way that he doesn't break eye contact, that's definitely a horror moment for me. And I'm not sure why. It's unsettling.
I think I agree with that sequence as being a good example of some of the horror in this film. And I think that it makes sense because, like you said, while she's not in any physical danger necessarily, they've built this guy up as someone who is dangerous. It is a caged animal. And then they even have him obviously talk to someone who's very unbalanced, but the implication is that he was able to get Miggs to his cellmate next door there to kill himself just by talking to him, and she's warned about not telling him any personal details and not wanting to get Hannibal into your head. So the idea is this guy is so dangerous that the very act of talking to him could potentially be life-threatening for you. So I feel like the movie itself gives you those details to say that, yes, she is on the other side of this locked-up cell, but that does not mean she is safe from him or that anyone is.
And you know what's funny now that you say that? Because I didn't realize it until now. But at the end of the movie, and maybe it's just me, but at the end of the movie, I feel like all of the viewers in some way are victims to Hannibal because you fall for him. Like, as much as we know that Hannibal is a murderous cannibal psycho, I think everyone leaves the movie kind of on his side, and I hate that because you know that he manipulated us into thinking that. Or am I the only one?
You know,
am I the only one who really likes him?
No, he's such an interesting character.
Some of the best stories that have come out even recently are ones that I like are kind of focusing on, like, making you root for a bad guy. Like, think about Breaking Bad or like for as I mean, another example. Like
he's definitely terrifying.
Or like You, when you watch the TV show You, like you're kind of like rooting for Joe sometimes in ways. So yeah, I think you sort of feel empathetic towards him.
It's almost like you're tricked by him. Like, oh, Hannibal wouldn't kill me because we're cool like that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand him. So I'm safe. But it's not true. He gotcha.
We like a bad guy that has rules. And so I think to see him being like, okay, I'm going to go after this guy who's treated me unfairly, who we clearly see is not a good guy because he propositions Clarice basically the first time he sees her. So, you know, we're conditioned to say this guy's a piece of shit, and then, you know, Hannibal also thinks that he's a piece of shit, so now we're going to root for Hannibal to kill this guy. When you see him stalking him to eat him, you're like, yeah, eat that guy.
Yeah, 100%, because that's what came to my mind. If you look at the people that he hurts throughout the course of the film, it's like they give the first person that he quote-unquote kills in the film is Miggs, and he kills Miggs for being rude to our hero. So, you know, Miggs throws some of his semen there at Starling. And so that's Hannibal's first reaction is he kills that guy. And then our first reaction to Chilton is that Chilton is a dirtbag and Hannibal doesn't like him. So it's like they're kind of making him hit the right notes during the film to make him likable. Now, clearly, he kills two police officers that did nothing wrong, and he kills people in the ambulance that, again, did nothing wrong. And we know that he's killed other people before this and will kill people after this. But we're given focus early on him disliking the people that we dislike and killing someone that we dislike, that I think that it does kind of win you over a little bit. And then the whole Starling's idea of like, he wouldn't come after me, he would think that would be rude. So him sort of forging this friendship with her, and we obviously like Starling, I think there are these elements in play to help make the character more likable, despite also being frightening at the same time.
And it's funny because we just had this whole conversation at the beginning of the episode about how we shouldn't romanticize killers. But I think that it's a testament to how well Anthony Hopkins plays him if we can feel that way about Hannibal Lecter.
Part of the reality of serial killers is that they are people who are typically able to garner empathy or be charismatic. So it just speaks to Anthony Hopkins' performance that he is able to do that and win you over, because, you know, not everybody's going to be able to do that.
Did Hannibal's character being at least somewhat likable to you, if you did find him likable, did that lean the movie away from horror, though, for you?
I think for me that it does, maybe a little bit. It kind of, our conversation makes me think of some of the stuff we've talked about with, like, say, children's horror, where it's like you can have some terrible things happen in those movies, but as long as they're two people you don't like or the bad guy, then it takes it away from horror. And I think maybe there is a little bit of that at play here.
I would say it kind of makes him feel less dangerous. And then when you feel like he's less dangerous or less of a threat to your main character, that maybe takes away a little bit of it being horror. Because I think for me, one element of horror is that I am afraid for the well-being of the main characters. But they do sort of re-emphasize that this guy is incredibly dangerous when he escapes from the police there. So, you know, there's a little bit of that likableness, but then they just kind of nudge you and say, okay, but don't forget that this guy is actually really, really dangerous.
I think it would have pushed it over the edge for me if, like, the ending was just slightly different, where, like, he calls Starling, and instead of there being, like, sort of an understanding, like, oh, you know, the world's more interesting with you in it, I'm, you know, don't worry, I'm not coming after you. But if it was more of a tone of, like, hey, I'm out, like, watch your back, like, that might have flipped the switch for me.
Yeah, same. And I'm glad it didn't end like that, too.
Agreed.
Do you think the details of Hannibal's methodology lead the film more towards horror one way or the other? Because obviously, it's very clear Hannibal is a cannibal. It even rhymes. And if he was just, say, stabbing his victims, or he liked to hang his victims, some other thing that was perhaps less taboo, they're still being killed, but we're not adding the cannibalism on top. Would that have changed that perspective? Does it matter in terms of classifying this film?
The fact that he's a cannibal kind of almost doesn't really, like, change anything for me, at least in this film. It's almost just like a little bit more of a plot device to make you think, oh, this is a bad, bad guy. But, like, I don't feel like in any particular moment during the film, like, oh, I'm scared that he's going to actually eat somebody. I don't know.
It adds a little to the, like, kind of, I guess, ick or, like, creepy factor when he's, like, describing to Starling, like, that he's what he's done when he's been eating people. But apart from that, and maybe, like, just the fact that, like, one of the things he did to, like, get the upper hand on the police officers was to bite their face, like, I don't know. And then you have to kind of be like, okay, yeah, he's a cannibal and he bit that guy's face. He probably, like, I don't know, tried, you know, swallowed some of the dude's face. I don't know. It's a little creepy. I think maybe it adds a little bit to it for me.
I don't know. This one's hard for me because it doesn't really affect the plot of the movie, but I'm trying to imagine if I took that factor out, if I would feel differently about him. And I think I would. I think I would feel a little less unnerved by Hannibal, but I don't really know why, because it doesn't affect the plot. I guess it's because it kind of adds to the unpredictability of him. Like, we don't know why he does what he does. We just know that he does it. And that's kind of scary. So I guess it does kind of add to it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it just adds a little bit to the mystique of him that, okay, well, he's you know, not only is he killing people, but he's eating them also. So it just makes you a little bit more unnerved by him in general.
Which, that makes sense. And it's kind of funny because they reference that too in Scream, you know, with the line, did they ever decide why Hannibal Lecter liked to eat people? Nope. It's more scary when there's no motive. So I kind of wondered if that was a factor for people too. Like, if his motives, maybe that's the core of it. If his motives were more understandable, would that have made it a lot easier to say this is definitely not horror? Like, he killed a bunch of people, but it was all for revenge or something like that. Something that we could more easily understand. Would that change it as well?
Well, yeah, it goes back to, like, Dexter as a series. If you have, anybody's watched that, I mean, he's doing this horrific stuff, but because he has quote-unquote rules, we're all sort of rooting for him, even though, you know, after a few seasons he starts getting real dumb and you're sort of rooting for him to get caught. But anyhow, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, it definitely changes. If Hannibal was just had this rule book that he was just killing bad people, for example, and eating the bad people, then it definitely makes it less scary. So that's kind of where I was coming from, that I just didn't really care about anybody that he was hurting in the film, and it seemed like they purposefully were making me not care about anybody that he was hurting. And Clarice was just going to be safe and fine.
And we've also talked about this aspect as well through what Mitz was saying about the idea of him still being dangerous and still feeling scared for Starling when he's behind his cell wall there. But do you think it also makes a difference that Hannibal, it seems like for all of us, is one of the scariest elements of this film, which I think is fair to say, or correct me if you think otherwise, but that he spends most of the film incarcerated. Does that also make a difference? Because obviously if he was out at large, it would be a very different kind of film.
I think between, say, Buffalo Bill and Miggs are kind of the other two, like, examples of serial killers that we have in the film. Like, they're kind of more unhinged and have a lot of, like, they feel more kind of, I guess, animalistic is maybe the term that comes to mind. So I don't know exactly where I'm going with this, I guess, but I guess it feels like a very different thing. And he's scary in a different way. He's scary in a, like, in kind of a controlled and ominous way instead of a, like, seemingly more unpredictable way that you get from the other examples.
It kind of makes me think a little bit about just some of your more standard slasher movies, things like a lot of the Friday the 13th series, although not all of the entries in it. But there's that whole idea of, you know, the person's running away and they're frantic while the killer is just walking gingerly towards them. Same thing in Halloween as well. And I wonder if maybe that's part of the thing. While it's unrealistic that this person's sprinting and the other person's walking and they still catch them, but the idea, just getting at the same concept that you're pointing out, is, you know, you're panicked, you're scared, you're freaked out by the person who's coming after you, and then the person who's coming after you is still rational and they're still calm and collected and still thinking. And maybe that's something that's a little bit disturbing, is like, okay, I'm not in my right mind, but they're 100% are, so they've got that ahead of me, no matter how far ahead I actually physically get.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add to it. Just, yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. I guess I hadn't thought of that in context, I guess, as much like as you described it with, like, a more standard slasher, but it makes a lot of sense.
I think that kind of dives into what I was saying earlier about, you know, Michael Myers has this sort of supernatural element. You know, he's unrelenting, can't be reasoned with, can't be bargained with. So I do think that I don't know if it's scarier, though, than somebody like Hannibal Lecter. Because then you're talking about what's scarier. Is just typical straight horror like Michael Myers scarier? Or is psychological horror scarier? Which one is more horror? So I don't know that I could really answer that question, but I think that both kinds of killer are scary. The psychological horror and the unrelenting sort of Michael Myers-esque kind of killer. But I do think in this particular film, like I said, Hannibal Lecter is less frightening because it doesn't seem like he's particularly interested in killing Clarice throughout the film. So that, to me, makes him less scary in that sense.
I guess I'm less concerned about the idea of necessarily which is scary, but I guess I'm trying to distill down the idea of, like, why a calm and collected killer, regardless of the portrayal, whether it's them sitting and talking normally or them walking after you, is more unnerving than someone who's frantic. But maybe it just comes down to the idea of control is maybe the way to distill it down, is when your killer is still in control and your victim is not in control, maybe that's what it just indicates, is that loss of control. Because there's definitely that vying for control with Clarice and Hannibal having conversations, because he's mostly in control of all their conversations. And maybe that's part of what makes that unnerving, even when they're just talking, even when he's incarcerated.
I think maybe an aspect of that is, like, when you have a killer who's less in control, I guess. So I'm thinking about the stark comparison from Miggs to Hannibal. It's just like you could say, like, Miggs did. I don't remember if they really specified what all he did, but he did horrible things, let's say, and you know he's in this cell, but he's also, like, clearly unstable and clearly crazy, I guess. And it's this kind of that loss of control. I mean, it's still scary, but it's a different kind of scary when you get somebody who is totally within all their faculties and has still chosen to do these horrible things.
That they did these things while seemingly thinking rationally.
Right, yeah. That's maybe, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm not sure if I'd say it outweighs one way or the other, or one scarier than the other, but it's just a different kind of scary, and it seems a little, the Hannibal side of things seems a little darker.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that, because that is what makes serial killers frightening, is because there's always, like, a ton of people in the life of that person who are like, well, we had no idea, he was a nice kid, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I know the original question was kind of about whether the victim being frantic or not kind of was added to the horror, right? But I think there's definitely some horror element and fear in sort of the potential energy of the calm killer in the room versus the one that's coming after you with a knife. Both things have some weight.
Would you say, do you think it's fair to say that even if Silence of the Lambs isn't a horror movie, that Hannibal Lecter is a horror villain?
I say yes. I will not elaborate. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. He's just very threatening. His demeanor is threatening. I think that, well, obviously his character has been expanded on in many other movies too, so I think other people agree with me on that. I can't really explain it. It's the vibe.
I think that he's a hair's width away from becoming really terrifying and horror at any moment, sort of. It's like I said, that kind of potential energy in him makes him horror for me, and they definitely establish that he's just a monster and has done all these horrible things. And with the police killing in particular, they establish what exactly he's capable of when he needs to be doing something. So yeah, I do think that he is horror himself. Although this film, I think, definitely lands more in the police procedural kind of thing.
Yeah, he feels to me like a horror character who's been plucked out and set in a different movie. Like, if you pluck him out, I guess, of this movie and set him in his own movie, then it feels like he could be a horror villain. And I say that having not read or seen any of the other movies, so maybe I'm wrong on that. But wrong on how it's been portrayed elsewhere, I guess. But just saying about what he feels like in this one, like, he could definitely be like a really scary slasher in, you know, some other like very horror movie, I think.
Which is part of what's fascinating to me about this and looking at the numbers, at least how streaming services labeled the other movies, because Hannibal, that movie, is the one most focused on Hannibal Lecter, with this version of a Hannibal Lecter played by Anthony Hopkins, and no one called it horror. So that is just the strangest thing to me, because it's him on the loose throughout the whole film doing what he's doing, and that's the one that apparently no one thought belonged in that category. Is so just bizarre to me.
That is really strange.
Maybe it's the possibility of what he can do that's more terrifying than actually seeing what he can do. Kind of like the sometimes lingerie is more sexy than nakedness kind of a thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, or it's more in the I'm sure often misquoted, and I will misquote it here, but it's the Alfred Hitchcock quote, the terror is not in the bang. You know, it's not the moment itself that's scary, it's the tension leading up to the moment that's scary. And in a way, Silence of the Lambs is all tension building up to those moments, and then they specifically don't show you some of those things that they've alluded to. They've talked about what Hannibal, for instance, did to the nurse, but they never show you what happened. They talk about what Buffalo Bill is doing to his victims, and you see the aftermath, and you even get a glimpse at the skin suit, but you never see him doing it. And I think maybe that's part of what is effective about this, but also deceptive in terms of categorizing, because it would be easy to say it's horror if you watched Hannibal, you know, bite the face off the nurse, if you were watching Buffalo Bill skin the woman. But because you're only talking about it, you feel unnerved and uncomfortable because you're picturing what that would be like, but the movie never shows you what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've definitely talked a lot about Hannibal, and if anyone has any other thoughts, they're welcome to do so. But there's some other topics I wanted to talk about in terms of this film. I definitely wanted to bring up at least two pieces of trivia that I thought were interesting about this coming from different directions, which is, one, I think that, Joe, you timed it right, and you said for this 2-hour runtime that Hannibal Lecter is only in the film for 30 minutes. Is that what you came to?
Yeah, it was like 31 minutes or so.
And then the other thing that was interesting is that Anthony Hopkins once dated Martha Stewart. They were dating during the time of this. And apparently after seeing him as Hannibal Lecter, she had to break up with him because she couldn't unsee his performance, which I think is just hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
I mean, I get it. He was really convincing.
I wonder, it's just like, how did that go down? Like, did she see the movie and was like immediately like, ah, that's, I'm done with this. Or did, like, you know, later on he like teased her and like made a Hannibal face at her or something. She's like, nope, can't do it. Can't do it.
If she's just Liz Lemon style, like, shut it down, shut it down.
Yeah.
The irony being that Martha Stewart was the one that was the real criminal in the relationship.
Oh, how the turntables.
There was one other question about Hannibal that Joe came up with, which is, how would you feel if you were seeing a therapist and making good progress and you found out they were a serial killer who was eating their victims?
As long as my insurance is paying for it, you know, therapy ain't cheap.
Honestly, I think it would be like, well, I thought I had problems, and then I'd feel better.
or you'd like feel validated in all the things they told you to change, but you didn't change. It was like, well, they didn't know what they were talking about. They were eating people. I don't have attachment issues.
I had come up or like thought about that question, but I don't know that I have a great answer for it myself. I'm not sure how I'd feel. Well, I'd feel, I guess, horrified. But yeah, I don't know what I would do, because it would feel like a really thin line to walk after that. Like, I don't know. If you stop seeing them, or is that going to be them being like, oh, well, I'm going to eat that guy now? Or if you keep seeing them, is he going to eat you? I don't know.
Or would you visit them once a month while they were incarcerated to continue your therapy?
Yeah.
Realistically, I don't think that would happen, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. If there was some real life situation where a therapist could see their patients still while in jail, you know, I think probably people would go more as like looky-loos than anything else.
I mean, at the end of the day, you could still visit them. You just wouldn't have to call the therapy appointment, right? Like, probably not Hannibal Lecter, but I mean, you can visit criminals, so maybe you could visit them for an hour to talk about your problems.
It's not the same thing, but it makes me think of like gross Point Blank for some reason, where like, you know, you get John Cusack's the hitman and he's seeing this therapist, and the therapist finds out that he's a hitman and is like, I can't see you anymore. But he's like, but John Cusack's like, no, I'm going to keep seeing you. And don't forget that I know where you live. It's like, that wasn't designed to make me feel good.
Now I'm feeling like I've got to be helpful and creative in a really interesting way, or Martin Blank's going to blow my head off.
Yeah, exactly.
So to slightly change topics in terms of all of this, we talked a little bit before about the law enforcement element, and I think that Mitz, you put it succinctly, is that this isn't so much a movie about a killer stalking people, but it's about the police stalking the killer. And so I kind of wanted to see, you know, we've talked in previous episodes about how having heroes kind of equal to the villains can take away from the horror feel. So, and because we're following a police investigation to catch a killer in this, did that take away from the horror feel for people being able to see behind the curtain, seeing the law enforcement tracking them?
I think that it was a little bit of an element for me that kind of, well, it was just another one of those that skirts the line for me, where it did kind of take away from me. And it's not just seeing the police side of things. I feel like this movie, you end up seeing behind several curtains. There's not a ton of mystery. I mean, there's a little mystery on what exactly Buffalo Bill's like motivations are and things like that. But for like you throughout the movie, you see scenes with, you know, you see scenes with the police, you see scenes with Hannibal and Buffalo Bill, and you're getting some of the behind the scenes things for all of them. And I don't know, maybe that takes it away a little bit for me, not having a little bit more mystique, I guess, around some of it, or some mystery maybe.
I was just thinking about this. If you completely remove Hannibal from the equation, this is absolutely just a police procedural. Like, 100%. The whole, like, Buffalo Bill storyline. So, you're just adding this kind of unnerving, sort of scary person into the mix. Definitely puts it a little bit in question, but I think the heartbeat of this film is more the police procedural, just because of the story is about trying to catch Buffalo Bob and stop him from murdering. And Hannibal is a character that is a plot device to be used to help stop that. But the core of the story, I think, is really trying to stop Buffalo Bill.
I think it does take away from the horror aspect a little bit, but I think some of it is still there because of Clarice. She's, like, even though she's a cop, she still has the final girl feel to her. She's young, she's beautiful, she's new at her job, so she, although she kind of is powerful, she is not equal to, you know, potentially a serial killer in strength or maybe dexterity or skill or smarts. She might not be equal to somebody like that, especially in the final scene where she's alone and she doesn't have any backup. So I think there is still a little bit of that horror there in her, which kind of throws the balance off. Because I feel like in a normal, typical police procedural, it's usually like a couple of guys who are pretty strong and brutish and they're armed and they're together. But this one's a little bit different in that way, I think.
So maybe just in general from Starling's vulnerability that it puts it more in that horror category than a standard procedural?
Yeah, exactly. That's the word I was looking for.
Do you think in general that serial killers, that they're in that horror territory, or are they too real to qualify? Because I kind of think about our episode on Pan's Labyrinth where we talked about the horrors of war taking it out of the horror category because it's something that people actually experience. So is covering a serial killer that's not some sort of colorful hockey mask or ghost face mask wearing killer, but that's just a normal looking person, does that take it out of the horror category?
I don't think so. I think it can still be horror, definitely. I think murder is jarring always, so I don't know. I feel like it's definitely, it fits into the category still.
Yeah, I think I tend to fall in the same boat on that. I think it doesn't take it, the serial killer thing doesn't take it out for me.
Yeah, I still have a really hard time categorizing in my head whether I think it's more horror if there's a supernatural element to things versus no supernatural element. So I don't really know what the answer is. Maybe it's more of the tension and the feel of the environment of the movie or the plot, but I still kind of feel in my head like when you're talking about just a guy, it just feels less horror to me. I don't know. Like, I'm sure some people would disagree, but yeah, it does feel less horror to me that it is just a guy.
Maybe that's a thing about it is where, so in like some horror movies where you do have that supernatural element, that feels like one of the things where it's like, they're kind of unstoppable. Like the bad guy's kind of unstoppable and you can't understand that. And because it is supernatural, you know, the slasher just keeps coming no matter what you do, no matter how many times you shoot him, like something is, they're just that powerful. And I think maybe Hannibal does have that feel a little bit, even though, you know, this movie I don't think is supernatural at all, but he still has that such a presence and such kind of like ominous control and power that he almost takes on that same like kind of unstoppable feel to him, even though he spends nearly the whole movie incarcerated.
So maybe it's just that kind of larger than life, unstoppable vibe of a character that can catapult into horror. So it's sort of maybe similar to Ghostface in the Scream movies. At the end, it is revealed that it's just a killer behind a mask, but while they have that mask on, while they have that costume on, they feel like there's something more than that. And so while there's nothing supernatural even implied, for instance, in those films, they're still very much in the horror category because of the whole feel of the character when they're still in costume, maybe.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, yeah, not being able to understand the motivations behind what's going on and them being that unrelenting force rather than a supernatural force. And that's kind of why I don't think that Hannibal feels, for me, I don't think Hannibal feels that way in this movie, like an unrelenting, unstoppable force, because it's not focused towards Clarice. It's just focused towards him escaping at that point. So,
and you kind of want to see him get out.
Right. You're rooting for it to happen. And so it doesn't feel like the unrelenting force of Ghostface, for example.
And you said before, too, that if you pull Hannibal Lecter out of this film entirely, that it is 100% just police procedural. Do you think that that's because Buffalo Bill just feels like the normal run-of-the-mill serial killer at that point? Like, he's just a guy, and he's not as intimidating?
Yeah, and also the way... Maybe I was about to say, because of the way that he is. No, it's just because, like, what he does is just goes and abducts people in his vans and he kills people. So it feels more just like cops going after a murder. And then it turns back toward the idea of, in this, what are they focusing on? They're focusing on the cops searching for this guy rather than the guy himself. Sort of thing, and that is the police procedural part of it. So that is why when you take Hannibal out, it feels less horror, because it is focusing a lot on Hannibal and not like police trying to catch him, although the relationship between him and Clarice obviously is a major focus. Buffalo Bill's just definitely a lot further removed from the whole situation than what Hannibal is. So it definitely falls more into that police procedural.
Did anyone have anything else that they wanted to bring up about this film?
I was going to add, and I talked about this with Mitz while we were watching, that this is definitely a very interesting snapshot of how women, professional women, are treated, or probably often still treated that way, but definitely were treated during the 80s, 90s, and earlier. You know, everybody's always asking Clarice if she knows the rules, if she's understood the situation, and telling her to protect herself and watch out, and undermining her, and she's getting hit on by like every man in her general vicinity. It's like, man, it's, you know, I think obviously they did it on purpose, but yeah, what women go through kind of sucks.
Yeah, it was interesting, that aspect of it. I had a quote from Jodie Foster talking about she wanted to play Clarice because she saw Starling as a feminist hero. And I think that that's accurate. And just for all the reasons that you said, right, is it's not just about her catching this killer, but it's also about her navigating this world that men sort of seem to view as theirs, and just, yeah, how they're reacting to her. It's all a very big focus of the movie, as well as a big focus of the book, of her having to navigate despite all of the way that she's treated by all of the men surrounding her professionally.
I think another interesting part of all that is just, I guess, how Crawford kind of uses that to his advantage. I think he's an interesting character, because I feel like, and maybe I'm off base on this because, again, I really only know this movie, but like he feels like the guy who, like, he understands all that and sees all that and doesn't see Starling as like less than any of the other agents, but realizes that a lot of the other agents see her as less because she's female. But instead of getting on board with that, he instead uses that as like a piece to manipulate the others. Like, he, you know, uses that as a piece to like manipulate, to get the sheriff out of the way in that one scene. And like, it wasn't because he actually thought that of Starling, or that she couldn't handle the situation or whatever, but he's just like, I know that the sheriff feels this way, so I'm going to use that to my advantage. And it feels like he's kind of got the opinion, or maybe I'm projecting this, but he feels like he's got an opinion of Starling where it's like she can handle this abuse. I'm not going to ask her permission because I already know she can handle it. And I'm just going to use this to both of our advantages.
Yeah, I haven't read all of the books. I have seen all of the material at this point. And I haven't even brought up the TV show, which is a big factor. But I kind of wanted to just deal with the mostly the Anthony Hopkins portrayal and versions of Hannibal Lecter. But anyway, just Crawford, I definitely see as this character that's as manipulative as anybody else, as any of the bad guys you're seeing in these films. He's definitely, I agree with your assessment that he's someone that's definitely playing off of how he thinks that other people are seeing the situation. He's not himself trying to be sexist. He's assuming the sheriff is, so he works that. And he's okay with, like you say, emotionally battering to a degree Starling because he figures she can handle it. I do like that scene after they leave where he brings it up and is like, oh, did it bother you what I said to the sheriff? And her being like, you know, they take their cues from you. They'll follow your lead. What you do matters. And him just kind of saying point taken. And that's as close as he'll get to an apology to her about the whole thing.
Yeah. I was saying like how basically almost every man in the film was sexualizing her, and Crawford being the one who didn't outright sexualize her was manipulating and using her towards his ends, which, you know, you could debate whether that, what kind of manipulation that was, but as you know, she was either being hit on by every man in the film or being used in some way by every man in the film. So definitely was a choice that they made to portray it like that. And that's probably the reality that a lot of people deal with and go through.
I liked how it showed. Oh, well, and just to go along with all this that we've said, just it showed that she had to just work twice as hard as anybody else to be. Well, and I think it was like showing like she's top of the class because she had to work twice as hard and to overcome those obstacles. And, you know, the very stark imagery of like her getting in the elevator with all those like giant bodybuilder guys, and she's just, I don't know, it's a very striking image, I guess.
The thing I was left with too, so I listened to the book, I listened to the audiobook that we'd mentioned earlier, and when I was finished with it, I was kind of sitting there like, I want there to be like a dozen Clarice Starling books where she's just out there solving crimes and murders. And that was the thing I wanted more than I wanted another book about Hannibal. So like the next thing I did, I was like, okay, I'll start listening to the next book in the series because I know Starling is in it. And that is Hannibal. And already kind of feeling a little bit like, oh, this isn't quite what I wanted because she doesn't feel quite the same in that one. But yeah, I seriously just want a whole series of Clarice Starling solving cases book series. And I know that they tried to do that, I think, under Paramount with the Clarice TV series, but it just really didn't sound like they were going to hit the mark with it. And I guess clearly audiences didn't think so because it got canceled after one season. But she's an interesting character that I would love to see more done with and for her to see her handled well, but it doesn't seem like that's particularly in the cards.
I guess just one note that I thought about with this is it feels like, so like X-Files came after this, and I don't know that it was actually any inspiration, but I can't help like drawing some parallels between her and Scully. And they're both just, I think, really cool characters. And, Scully's awesome. I love the X-Files for both Mulder and Scully. But anyways, just, I guess, drawing that comparison.
I guess just the fun bit of trivia that I'd mentioned when we were talking about that the other night is it is interesting to see that Gillian Anderson ends up playing Hannibal's therapist in the Hannibal TV series. So there's like that kind of cross connection. But yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying. If I wouldn't be surprised to find out that people viewed Clarice Starling as a template for what became Scully's character in the X-Files. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, same.
All right, I guess I'll put my final question to everybody. Did anybody, since we all said that we were kind of on the fence, did anybody change their mind about their designation of this film as we've talked it through? Are we all still, is everyone still voting the same way?
I think it's still on the line for me, but I'm still saying, I guess, not horror.
Yeah, I say not horror still.
Yeah, I came close to changing my mind, but I still think I'm not horror.
I'm still going to stick with horror, but it's damn close. So. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for another episode of Is It Horror? Next time, in 2 weeks, we will be talking about our first book that we're covering. At least I don't think we've covered a book before. So this will be our first official book that we're covering. We've certainly read books adjacent to stuff, but we're going to be talking about Stephen King's 11/22/63. So join us back here for that. I have been Steve.
I'm Joe.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Mitch. Bye.
Bye.
Farewell, Clarice.
Bye, Clarice.
Thanks for joining us at Is It Horror? We post new episodes every other Friday. Think we didn't give this movie a fair shake? Think we missed something? Do you have a suggestion for future episodes? Or did you just want to say hi? If so, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Is It Horror Pod, or you can email us at isithorrorpodcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, stay safe and keep asking yourself,
Is It Horror?